I'm really happy to be here today. Do I need to move this? I do want to apologize, though. I've been coughing all morning, so I have my water, so I might have to stop a little bit and breathe, and because I've had a raspy voice, kind of. So I'm really excited to present this morning a topic that I think is really important. I don't think it's talked enough about enough, and there's some room to learn more. There's always room to learn more. So I've got 25 minutes, and this topic can easily be spent hours on. It's broken down into three parts that I'm gonna quickly go through. And there's an activity that we might not get to, so I might just explain it, have you guys do it in your own time. So we'll start. Okay, well, I'm gonna start off by defining what depression is. Its meanings and kind of differentiate between some things. So depression pretty much, I believe the next slide will say the definition. I had a rather hard time finding a definition that I was happy with. A lot of them were kind of vague. This one kind of summarizes it, although it is vague. It's pretty much, you know, a sadness. It's loss of interest, low energy, and it's got a series of physical, emotional, and mental symptoms. So what are these symptoms? We're gonna get into it and kind of differentiate and dissect it a little bit for you guys. All right, here are some of your symptoms that you guys will see. And of course, the way I want to present this is as if you yourself were experiencing these symptoms or as if someone you knew came to you for help. So you know how to differentiate, okay? So we've got depressed mood, feeling sad, obviously, you know, you might feel empty. Is there a significant weight loss, weight gain? Do you have problems sleeping? You know, are you sleeping too much? Are you sleeping not enough? It is not uncommon to see someone with depression sleeping 12, 15 hours a day. Throughout my research that I did, some people won't sleep at all for a while or have sporadic, you know, periods of sleeping, whereas some will just go through the day and not have much energy. There's loss of interest in things that you used to like. Maybe you still love to play soccer, maybe you still love to read a good book, and now you can't get out of this feeling that you don't really want to do anything. Okay, hopelessness, there's guilt, deterioration of physical activity, you take care of yourself, you present yourself well, but all of a sudden you just kind of, you look maybe a little more scruffy, not really taking care of yourself as you usually would, not seeing the interest to do that. And then there's a lot of deterioration as far as work and agitation, restlessness. Now, depression, when diagnosed in an adult, is usually you will see them as depressed. In a child, I would say, in my research, I believe it was adolescents, like, I guess, tweens and younger children, you will see them as more irritable than depressed. You've got an inability to think or concentrate, and then slow to move and to react. Now, I wanted to make sure that you understood the difference between depression and dysthymia. How many of you know what dysthymic disorder is? Yeah, not very many. I didn't know what it was until, you know, I started studying in my undergrad and through master's what the difference is. Okay, dysthymia, the difference is depression can be very severe, but it can be in episodes. Dysthymia is kind of a mild depression that will go through at least 2 years, and it's kind of there. The symptoms, which is the next slide, it's depressed for most of the day, most days and not, so 6 out of 7 days, the majority of your days. And the symptoms are similar to depression, it just wouldn't be as severe. So it's kind of a melancholy personality that you've kind of lived with for at least 2 years or more. Okay. I hope that cleared some questions up about what it was. I think it's important to know the difference between that, especially because with dysthymia, it could be very, from what I've heard people tell me and in research and from what I've heard professors say, it can be very tricky. It can be very, because people will learn to live with it. I was listening to NPR on, I can't remember the radio show. I want to say Beautiful Mind, but that's not it. It's about the mind. And the man he interviews people, and every week it's a different episode regarding a different disorder in the DSM. And what they do is, you know, they interview, they tell you what it is to, live this way. And there was a woman who was dysthymic, and she did not know. She just kind of felt melancholy. She went and started getting treatment. They diagnosed her as dysthymia. And I remember so clearly her saying, the first time I felt this weird sensation, I didn't know what it was, and I was with family, and it was kind of weird. And then it just dawned on her, I was happy for the first time. She knew what was going on, so that's kind of what dysthymia is like. Okay, so those are some definitions. We're going to go into prevention and taking care of yourself, which is, okay, good. I can't see the slides, so I wonder what time when it passes. I took a look at some research. There's a lot of good research out there. This one that I'm featuring, which is the next slide, I advise you to look at the sources up there. It's also at the end of the presentation, and if you want it at any time, you can ask me and I'll give it to you. It took a look at clergy. They had a good amount of Episcopalian, Catholic, rabbis, nuns. They had Seventh-day Adventists in the study, Baptist preachers, a wide variety, which I enjoyed. And it kind of looked at what their career was like. You guys who are in this profession, who are going to be chaplains, who are going to be pastors, who are going to be working in missions, on average, you're working 60 hours a week. On average, you're working 60 hours a week. Some of them worked 40, 52, some of them worked up to 80. That's a lot of hours to give to a profession. And you guys need to remember to take care of yourselves. And we're going to learn how to do that here in a little bit. You're spending 12 evenings away from home. You're spending about 12 evenings a month away from home. When I saw that, I thought, okay, that's not too much. Actually, when you start thinking about it, it is. That's almost 2 weeks that you will not be with your family. You're going to be out maybe in a church meeting, helping another member, helping someone in crisis. You're often the first person to deal with a crisis. Many times, let's say for me, for instance, if I have a client or any other psychologist that experiences a crisis, they might come to me because they know me and they have a relationship with me. However, a lot of people in a congregation don't necessarily always go to a counselor. So the first person that they might call or go to would be a pastor, would be a chaplain. And so you're the first one to get hit, not only with the problem, but with all the emotion that comes with it. It's like when you tell someone a story, when something exciting happens, and you go and you talk to them, and the first person you tell, you're like, oh my God, this happened and this happened. You're breathing hard, you have all this energy to tell them, but then when you tell like 6th, 7th, 8th person, it's like, yeah, this happened. It's not as impact, you know, you don't feel the impact. So you need to be prepared when someone, and many of you maybe already experienced this as pastors or in your field study, that someone will come to you and you're gonna be dealing with them and the emotion that comes behind it. And then the statistic they had in this particular study was that 1 in 6 will people will obtain help from either a clergy or mental health professional. It went on to say that you are more than likely to see the same amount as pathology that as a mental health professional would. So that means that you're probably going to see the same amount of people who are suffering from schizophrenia, from anxiety disorders, as someone in the profession of counseling would. Okay, so we can move on to the next slide. So knowing these statistics and knowing what you're up against, and maybe you've already experienced some of it, you have to think to yourself, what's important to you? Being able to figure out what it is that you are out there to do as far as your values, what interests you, what are your priorities, will really, I think, is going to be the first step in getting you mentally healthy as well as emotionally and physically healthy, because you know where your energy is going to be focused on. Are you focusing on family? Are you focusing on a status? Is that what you're trying to get to? Are you trying to get to money through education? Are you trying to get a good job? Salvation, is that all you're looking at? Are you looking to spend time with your friends, impress your friends, to get a place in education, you know, get your PhD and get this status? What are the things that you really want to do? Because these are things that are gonna be affecting you every day, and you need to be able to prioritize. Okay, the next slide is the activity, and I do this with my clients. I don't know if I have the time. Are we good on time? Okay. What I want you guys to do, and really quick, this is 10 things, but I'm actually going to do 5. So if you have a pencil, something to write with, and then, you know, this, you're going to throw this away if you want later, so it doesn't have to be anything nice to write with, the paper and pencil, your hand, your neighbor's hand, something to write on. And we're going to do this quickly so we don't run out of time later. And what I want you guys to do is to list, I know this says 10, but I want each one of you to list 5 things that you absolutely love to do. Any 5 things. And I'll give you about a minute or less to do that. Okay. I see y'all are still writing. I'll give you a little bit more. 5 things that you love to do in this world. Anything. Okay. That was a short minute. Now what I want you to do is to, you know, circle or just make a note. What, from those 5 things, what are the 3 things that you love to do the most from those 5 things that you've written down? So put a little star by it or check it off or make them a note about it. Okay. Some of you may be writing, but I'm going to go on and continue. We did this activity in my supervision last year with Dr. Kaczynski, and the point of it was sometimes, like I mentioned in the slide before, you really don't remember what's important to you. And even if you do, your values change, your priorities change. As you go through education, as you go through experiences, what was important to you before may not be as important as it is now, and maybe what's important to you now may be in a process of changing. We're constantly changing, we're constantly evolving, especially in an education setting, because you're constantly getting much more education and more knowledge that's being, you know, put into your mind, so you're getting new information. From what I got, or what the point of doing this is, for you to remember what's important to you. You love doing these 5 things, and from these 5 things, you know, these 3 things are like the best things in your life. Make sure that as you continue your studies here, and as you go out and to your field of work, whatever church or ministry you go into, that you can still do these 3 things. Because these 3 things are gonna keep you grounded, they're gonna keep you excited about life, they're gonna keep you emotionally healthy. I'll give you an example. When I did it, my 3 things, I think the first one was spending time with my husband. I think I put holding hands or something. And then the second was being outside, and the third one was being in water. I love swimming, I love surfing, and, you know, anything in water, which I can't do very much well here in Michigan. But the first ones, these are really important things to me, and I like them because it makes me feel good. It doesn't matter what happened at school, it doesn't matter what I messed up or what fight someone I might experience, it doesn't matter. When I'm doing this, I feel re-energized and I feel better. So these are things that I want you guys to remember to make time to do. If you see yourself working these 60 hours or more or less during the day, during your weeks, and you are not having time to do at least one of these things, you're gonna very easily fall into a situation that could be dangerously borderline depression, because you're going to be wearing yourself out. I think one of the most important things to remember is that you have chosen to be in a profession that is of helping people. We're helping people, like social workers, teachers, psychologists, counselors. We are being educated to help other people, and we're educating other people as well. If you're not taking care of yourself, you cannot expect to take care of somebody else at the best that you possibly can, which is what that person deserves. So to be able to do things for yourself,
really helps you to remember why it is that you're enjoying what you do, because sometimes you're like, why am I here? What am I doing? You know, so much to study. I've got, you know, 3 tests, a midterm, and all this stuff to do, and it's so much easier to just go work, you know, like the Gap or something. But you've chosen this profession. You've chosen to be here, and at one point, I'm sure you've enjoyed what you're doing and what you're learning. So remember those things and take care of yourself, because there's people that will that love you very much, and there's people that take care of you. You know, you have a spouse, you have a sister, you have parents that support you, but ultimately, there's nobody that will take care of yourself like you take care of yourself. So you need to do that before anything. And then I would advise you that you go from yourself, take care of your family. Those are the people that you're with for the long run. You want it to work out. You want to show them how much you care. Like your profession, I know you loved your spouse, your brother, your sister at one point, and sometimes it gets overwhelming with everything you have to do. But you need to remember, take care of yourself, take care of them, and then take care of your congregation. Okay. So the research, I'm going to tell you, okay, well, how do I take care of myself when I've got a million things to do and I got to pay bills and do all this stuff? Well, I've gone through some research, and all the citations and stuff for all the things that I'm presenting is at the end of the presentation, so you can get it from then or from me later. There's approach to mental health promotion. These are some characteristics, and there is more. These are the ones that were, I guess, the top ones and the ones I felt were more important, and because of time also, I wanted to go through this. Having a positive outlook on life helps a lot. Being positive. You know, today is a horribly ugly day outside, but it doesn't mean you have to. You know, I woke up and I just covered myself again. I'm like, okay, let's pretend I'm in Texas and it's sunny and this is not happening. But I don't have to stay that way all day. You know, I have to get up and I have to be there for people. You know, I saw a client this morning. If I were to sit there and just yawn through the whole thing, how would she feel? She wouldn't appreciate it, and she might just think, you know, why even here? You need to have a positive outlook. Look at things. Okay, today is raining. That's fine. Let's stay in. You know, tonight when I get home, I'll just turn on the heater and have hot chocolate and then study and read and go to bed. That sounds fine to me, and it'll be relaxing. So that's something positive you can think of. So when you're working these long hours and you are studying and, you know, with ongoing education and through your program, remember there's something good. You wanted at one point to be at Andrews and to get your education, and God gave you that gift. So let's take advantage of it and appreciate it, because it would really help your emotional and mental stability. Have realistic expectations. Have realistic expectations. It's really easy to sometimes, you know, dream and think, I want this, I want this, I want this. But when reality hits you, it's going to be a big bang and it's going to hurt. You cannot go into, let's see, education and think the first year off you're going to make $150,000. $150,000, yeah. That's not usually what's going to happen. You're going to start off in a somewhat lower salary. You have to have some realistic expectations of what your job entails and what it means to be a pastor, to be a chaplain. You know, what are the expectations of you? What, you know, maybe you're not going to be the boss of a big corporation someday and make millions of dollars. You're not going to be, you know, have Trump Towers. Maybe you will. I don't know. But have realistic expectations and accommodate as you keep going. Manage your emotions. I don't think, from my own experience, from what I've seen and from research, I don't believe that emotions are taught as much as they should be. Most people are, their emotions are hungry, sad, angry, and happy. And that's about, you know, as deep as it gets. Sometimes parents don't teach you how to deal with it, with what it is, and what I'm gonna do in the next slide is for you to remember and kind of learn how to recognize what your emotions are and know how to deal with them. So whenever something bad happens and you may be feeling upset or angry, you know what that feels like, so you know what to do. So management of emotions is very important. Draw strength from others, but don't be overly dependent. So have friends that are pastors, have friends that are chaplains, but have friends that are outside of your area of study. have people that, you know, that are in different programs, that work at some store, have people that aren't always in your circle so that you can breathe fresh air and enjoy conversations with them. Know that they'll be there for you, have good friends, and know that they will be there for you, but don't be overly dependent on them, because you're gonna wear yourself out and them out, and that is not gonna be a good, healthy relationship for you guys. And probably, which should be one of the most important, is remember to maintain your spiritual life. I've heard from, you know, some friends that I've had in seminary before and in undergrad that were studying theology, just because you're preparing a sermon every week doesn't mean you're preparing a relationship with Christ. You may be studying, you may be researching, you may know a lot about Ellen White, you may know a lot about the Bible, but you need time to do that, but you need time to build your own rapport, your own relationship with Jesus Christ, and study the Bible in a way that will help you for what it is you're doing, but also in a way that will help you in your personal life, because it's very, very different from work. Okay, so the next slide. DBT. Last week, I believe, I had the privilege with the Counseling and Testing Center to have kind of a little seminar about dialectical behavior therapy. And these are, actually there's more. I have more in your handout, and I thought these were important, so that's why they're on here for you to keep and remember. I took some off here just because of time. I didn't know how well I would go and or not. These are some things you can do to relax yourself, to help yourself on those days that are very stressful, on those days or those weeks that you're just tired and, you know, maybe you don't want to talk to anybody about it. Maybe you are talking to people, but they're not giving you the response you want. These are some things you can do to take care of yourself. Mindfulness. This is the first category. And we've got square breathing. On your bulletin, it says observe and square breathing. I'm sorry. We're going to talk about observe a little later. I'm going to deal with square breathing right now. A lot of times, I'm sure most of you have heard, you know, if you're angry, breathe, count to 10, you know, hold it, breathe out, that kind of thing. But what I really liked about this is that you may be breathing, but you may still be thinking about whatever happened that is making you upset. Square breathing pretty much is breathing in, counting to 4, breathing out, counting to 4. But imagine a square, okay? Before you may be upset that something, you know, a bad criticism or something happened, you're really anxious at the moment, you're really upset, one thing you can do to calm down is kind of focus on breathing and drawing this square in your mind. And it'll take your focus away from this incident that may have happened or whatever it is that's stressing you, and focus more on the square, breathing, calming yourself down to think more rationally, because we don't always think rationally when we're angry. We may be in the moment, and so we need to calm down, and that would help. Okay, I'm going to skip over to the emotional regulation because I had talked about it a little bit. And I'm going to get body scan and observation, which is from mindfulness, and talk about that. What I was saying a while ago, managing your emotions, this is a good way to do it. This is how you can do it. Getting to know what it is that you're feeling. Are you hungry and you're actually irritated? You know, are you not eating well and that's why you're feeling this way? Are you angry and you may be crying? Like personally, when I get very, very angry, I'll cry or something. And so, I mean, am I sad? Am I angry? What does it feel like to have that emotion? Last year, I was doing some kind of ridiculous exercise, or trying to, and I pinched a nerve in my back, I think sciatic nerve. So, and it hurt really bad. And I spent a good couple months recovering from that. But now I know what I did to cause that pain, and I know how it felt, and I know what it felt like to go through it and heal. So next time I do something, or I'm tempted to do something the way I did it, I think I was doing some kind of ab workout, the way I did it then, and I might feel something, I know immediately, okay, I knew what this is. This is the feeling I had. This is what it means. I'm almost, you know, I might be in a danger zone to pinch my nerve. I need to stop. I need to change what I'm doing. The same thing with your emotions. Learn what it is, and you can learn through observation or body scan, which is letting you, let's see, sit down and experience it, you're sad. What does that mean? What does it feel like physically to be sad? I may be, you know, hunched over a little bit. I may have tear coming down. I may not have much energy. What does it feel like emotionally? You know, I may feel really sad. I may feel very distressed. What does it feel like physically? I might have a headache. I might have some fatigue. These are the kind of things that you want to learn, okay, about your emotions. Okay, we're going to go to self-soothe, which is distress tolerance. I like this one, which is why I put it up there. And it's self-soothe using your five senses. What it means is that whenever you are in a situation where you feel, I don't know, overwhelmed is the best example I can think of, is that you can be able to bring yourself back to a good balance using things that will soothe you. For instance, I like looking at pictures. I can spend all day looking at photography or painting. A visual self-soothe, because remember I did say, you know, you can do this with all five senses. A visual self-soothing would be to look at pictures, to look at art, something that visually pleases me and that would calm me down. I like modern art. It's very projective for me, and I like coming up with my own, you know, situation of what it is. So that might be something that if I'm having a bad day or if I'm upset, will help me to soothe myself. Another example is food. If there's something that you like to eat, if there's like this really awesome Wham sandwich that is really good and you think you deserve it because, hey, it's been a hard day, you can have that, and that will help you calm yourself down, okay? The last one that I'm going to talk about before we get to the last section, because I'm shortly running out of time, I'm sure, is ignoring. There's a lot of, you're going to be in the spotlight a lot of times, so you need to learn that you're up there, and a lot of people are going to love what you say, and a lot of people are going to have a lot of bad things to say, you know, to say to you, or a lot of criticisms. You need to be able to take what's positive in and let the rest roll by. Okay, the last section is about suicide. You're not immune to it in any situation of your life, whatever most professional degree you might have. There's no one that I know that I've seen in research that has been immune to it. There's a definition of suicide, but pretty much it's a conscious decision to end your life. The behavior that you'll be looking at is ideation. Are you talking about it? Or is someone you know talking about it? Gesture. Are you buying a gun? Are you getting pills? Are you getting, you know, the way to do it? Attempt. Are you shooting a gun for practice? Do you see yourself trying to figure out how many pills I can take and still be alive, and how many pills I can take and not be, and then completion would be the last one, which is committing suicide, and that's the next slide. I'm sorry about that. Some of the symptoms. Okay, and then the next. Some of the symptoms include hopelessness. There's nothing left to do, so I might as well. You know, that's the only thing you can think of. And some of them may be like depression, like a sleep, guilt, anger. Make sure, you know, a lot of people may be suicidal when they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or they're hallucinating for some reason. So that's always something to make, you know, sure about. If someone's talking to you, make sure they're not under the influence of anything. Have you lost someone? Are you alone? Did you just come to Andrews and you have no support group? You're really sad. These are some things you want to look for. Tunnel vision, like I mentioned a little bit ago. Everything is so overwhelming. You've tried different things, and the only thing that you can see is, as a solution, would be suicide. And then, getting rid of possessions. You see that it's a very subtle way that some people, you know, start giving things away, start donating things, start getting rid of what they have. Okay, we're almost done. And then I want to let you know, what do you do? What do you do if you're suicidal? What do you do if someone you know is suicidal or comes to you and says, like, hey, Pastor, I need help. I don't know why I'm feeling this way. I don't know what to do next. So what I've done, the first slide is on the next slide. The first one I'm going to say is if you yourself are feeling suicidal, and the second part is if someone comes to you. If yourself are feeling suicidal, have come to this point where, you know, you're overwhelmed, tell someone. Don't go through it alone, because you're going through this tunnel vision where nothing, you've already tried everything else and nothing's worked. So it's really unlikely that you're going to talk yourself out of it all of a sudden. So tell a friend, tell a counselor, tell a pastor, tell anybody. In this area, you can call the Madison Center, and I can get you these numbers later. And also at the counseling testing, we have them. I know Benton Harbor, South Bend, Mishawaka area, and then St. Joseph, there's Madison Center, Riverwood, Lakewood Hospital. All of these have 24-hour hotlines. On campus, we have the ACC, the Community and Counseling Center, and the Counseling and Testing Center. They're both in Bell Hall. ACCC is open until 8, and the Counseling and Testing is open until 5:30. And if you go there, these people will help you. You can always call 911, and they're going to get you the help you need. But it's really important to not stay alone, because you need someone to be there with you. If someone comes to you with, you know, they come and they say, you know, I think I'm going to end my life, is there a plan? They've obviously, some people will think about it, and they might, you know, say, I want to kill myself, I want to kill myself. But do they really have a plan? Do they have a means? Do they have a gun? Do they have the pills in their pocket? Do they have them in their purse? Do they have a car or a place where they, you know, they have picked? Do they have that? And do they have a support system? Get them to a place where you can call someone for them, where you can have someone, because you yourself can't be with them 24 hours a day. You cannot take care of someone like that. You eventually have to go home or, you know, go do the things you need to do. Do they have someone that will be there with them overnight, whether it is ending up taking to the hospital or being at home under surveillance, someone they love and they support, okay? These are really important questions that you need to ask and make sure that you can get them the best care possible. Okay, so that's it for that. These are my references that, thank you. These are my references that I, these are the books and articles that I encourage you guys also to look at, and it'll be up here and you can get it from me. I'll email it to you anytime if you want to. So thank you.